the Seventh Judicial Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having business before this honorable court are admonished to draw near and give their attention, as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Bourne versus Gilman. Mr. Townsend.
May it please the court. There are two reasons why the law does not support the judgment in this case. First, genuine issues of material fact exist on the issue of whether or not the reasonably expected user of this product is going to foresee the dangers associated with it. The second reason why the law does not support the judgment revolves around the risk utility test that applies even where a consumer or a user is aware of a danger. Under this risk utility test, as long as the burden of incorporating a feasible safety feature is not outweighed by the cost, then under those circumstances, there is a duty to protect even against dangers which would be considered open and obvious. So this all revolves back to Indiana's product liability statute, which was amended in 1998, and with some significant changes, and which have resulted in some changes in the case law as well.
Mr. Townsend, is it your basic position that the record showed that it's possible to manufacture a goalpost that simply cannot be torn down, or that in the process of tearing them down, it's possible to create one that doesn't hurt people?
Yes, Your Honor. The I think you're referring to the indestructible goalpost,
well, right,
which was
there's
one
the
of
indestructible
the features.
One, which is quite a bit more expensive. There's the hinged one, but I'm not sure on this record that it's clear that any of these wouldn't at some point be torn down and be terribly damaging to people.
The danger is not necessarily in the fact that the goalpost comes down. The danger is in the snapping of the base, and that follows with a sudden collapse. Normally, when we see these things come down, we see them rocking back and forth, and it appears to come down into the crowd in a non-threatening manner.
Does the record show that? It seems to me your opponents contest that there is solid evidence of what the quote-unquote normal trajectory of a pulled-down goalpost is.
Well, it's our contention that the record includes testimony of actual, you know, collegiate fans, such as Mr. Bourne. If people really thought these were going to snap and fall on them, we wouldn't have these goalpost takedowns going on. These thousands of people that participate in these over time likely would not even engage in this kind of activity if they had a reasonable expectation that they were going to have a 470-pound goalpost snap and suddenly collapse on them.
I mean, I hope that you're right, but you may be assuming a degree of good sense in the college age group that does not always exist.
Well, I agree that it may not always exist, but we are dealing with the reasonably foreseeable user, and we have to take that into account. And when Indiana modified its product liability statute, it abandoned strict liability. And once strict liability is taken out the window, we're into comparative fault issues. And when you have issues on the relative obviousness of a danger, under the current product liability statute, that becomes a factual issue. It's not dispositive. And as the court explained in the recent case of Mesman versus Crane Pro Services, that goes to the heart of this case.
Was there a history of tearing down a goalpost at Ball State?
Yes, there was, Your Honor. The defendant had replaced these goalposts three times. The defendant, in an interview with ESPN, said that he watches football on Saturdays and roots for the underdog in the hopes that there'll be a teardown and he can have some more business as a result of this. So this isn't a situation where the defendant is, you know, unaware or that this is some, you know, freak event. This is the third time in a period of several years that this had happened at Ball State. It also happens, of course, at other universities.
I was just going to say there's a question nonetheless about who is responsible for that. I'm thinking, for example, of the case of Moss against Crossman, where the question has to do with the product, which is the air gun. And it's not only the manufacturer who might be responsible. If you're manufacturing a product that is susceptible to that sort of injury, maybe that's all you can do.
Well, it's not. You're right. It's not just the manufacturer, and that's what the statute now reflects in terms of applying the negligence calculus to these mm-hmm. cases and the comparative fault aspect. And once we get into that realm, it's not so unfair to have some responsibility, especially where we have a situation like this where the manufacturer knows this is going to happen and is hoping that it'll happen because it's you know, it's good for business. And if there isn't
an air rifle is more obviously dangerous than a goalpost. You agree with that?
I certainly agree with that. I also would point out that in the Moss case, the evidence was undisputed that they knew that the plaintiffs knew that the BB could puncture your eye and cause death. And in this case, there isn't any testimony from anyone that the people know that this kind of thing is
well,
going to happen.
Well, my recollection is that the evidence was undisputed that it could pierce the skin. And having gotten that far, there was no – one simply can't say, well, I didn't realize it was going to pierce that skin in that way. And so here – there is, in fact, a recognition that goalposts can be, I mean, they're very heavy, that they can fall down. Maybe they don't have the catastrophic consequences every time, but it strikes me that it may not be so far from the Moss situation.
It's not the coming down of the goalpost that is the surprise. It's the snap and the sudden collapse.
Well, that's just a function of their being made out of aluminum, or?
That is a function of the brittle metal that the defendant decided to use. The defendant had seen where these had broken off on multiple other occasions, too, in the same place. And as our design engineer pointed out, there are, you know, many different ways to deal with this. You can change the metal and make it tougher. You can make it more bendable. You can put a hinge on there so that it can go down, you know, in a controlled manner by the stadium officials. So it is, Your Honor, a factor of the brittle metal that is used and really doesn't need to be used. But now we also have to, you know, be aware that just because the plaintiff may have some expectation, and we don't think that there's evidence that he expected this to snap and come down suddenly, but even if he did, as a matter of law, we still have the risk utility test to come in and still allow there to be a claim on his behalf. We believe the evidence showed that it really is not a major burden on this manufacturer to use these alternative safer designs. In fact, the defendant even began selling the hinged version of the goalpost shortly after this incident and has had some success with that sale. Now, granted, it is slightly more expensive, but not outlandishly so, and particularly in the context of a university the size of Ball State. And so with the evidence in the record, you know, it's not just a reasonable expectations argument, there's also the risk utility factor to be addressed as well.
I suppose there are trade-offs involved, though, aren't there? If you make it less brittle, it may be heavier. And
well, there are trade-offs, but that is something for argument to a jury and not something that we can resolve as a factual matter at the district court level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Schultz.
May it please the court, we believe that the district court Judge Hamilton properly held as a matter of law that the goalpost was not unreasonably dangerous. There's been some discussion in briefs and to this court that there have been changes in the Indiana Products Liability Act, but I submit to you there have been no changes in the Indiana Products Liability Act as it pertains to the requirement and the burden on plaintiff to prove that a product is unreasonably dangerous. There's been some discussion about open and obvious taken away as an affirmative defense under the Products Liability Act in 1998, but that did not change the opening language requiring a product to be unreasonably dangerous. That is the similar language that was used in its predecessor before 1998, and it continues to be the law today. So what this court needs to examine is whether or not plaintiffs have proven that this goalpost was unreasonably dangerous, or more particularly, whether the court was proper in finding as a matter of law that it was not unreasonably dangerous.
But, you know, I mean, the trouble here is that it's pretty hard on this record to say that it wasn't completely predictable that goalposts would be pulled down by students after football games. And goalposts begin by being fairly heavy, and they become even heavier if there are students hanging on to the crossbars, because the weight of each person then gets added on to it. I'm just wondering how far you take this. If there's a product that's going to be put to a use, it's an absolutely predictable use, and it's dangerous at that use. It'd be like building a porch and knowing that a lot of people were going to go onto it and it was going to collapse and hurt them, and yet say, well, you know, nonetheless, it's obvious that if you put too many people on the porch, it'll collapse, so never mind. That can't be the law.
I think if you have a porch and people are jumping on it up and down and it's rocking and it's starting to go and you're standing underneath the porch and you know it's coming down or you know it's going to come down, yes, I believe you have not proven it's unreasonably dangerous, because I think using the objective test, as is the law in Indiana, the objective person would realize you don't stand under a porch that is starting to collapse. And that's what the video shows in this case.
You've put a critical caveat in there. You know it's going to come down. And the whole essence of your opponent's case is if it comes down, as it were, in slow motion, people can run out of the way and avoid the harm. If it just snaps and crashes, and then they can't.
And I think that's a good point. And I think, Your Honor, you made a good point when you asked counsel, where in the record is there evidence of a goalpost slowly coming down? There isn't any. There's a complete absence. Their expert did not produce any videotape of other goalposts coming down, of any evidence whatsoever. Did no testing to show that a goalpost with 18 students on it, rocking it, can come down slowly. There is no evidence to that effect. And furthermore, the material that was used, and it's undisputed by Mr. Gilman in this case, was a material that bent more. It was not as brittle. That's in the record in his affidavit. This was not a brittle material that was used. So if anything, this goalpost should have bent slower than other aluminum goalposts in the market. So I think it's a good point that there has been no evidence to show of a sudden snapping versus any other goalpost of this type.
The students were encouraged by the university, or at least somebody in the stadium, to tear the goalpost down.
Yes, it was, and we believe that's reckless, almost criminal. And, of course, the university did settle out in this case, wisely so, because, yeah, they did invite the students to come out. They said the goalposts look lonely is what the message said. And interestingly, the university official, I think as Mr. Byrne testified in his deposition, that he was aware that people could be hurt by goalposts coming down.
Who was Ball State playing?
Toledo Rockets. We believe the Welch versus Scripto case is right on point, talking about open and obvious. and the way you should look at it for unreasonably dangerous. The interesting thing is when Welch was decided, the Indiana Products Liability Statute did not have open and obvious as an affirmative defense, such as it is today. And the court said, that doesn't matter. We look at evaluating unreasonably dangerous. And that's where I think the Mesman court is wrong in this case. Mesman looked at incurred risk as a defense, and the court went on to state that it should be a question of fact and said that Indiana would not require open and obvious as a possible summary judgment when looking at unreasonably dangerous. Mesman didn't cite any cases to support that conclusion. In fact, there's been two Indiana appellate court decisions since Mesman that have said that in certain cases you can find open and obvious as a matter of law, and therefore they did not establish unreasonably dangerous. And that's both the Cole versus Lantis case and the Baker versus Hay America case.
But, of course, Indiana is a comparative fault jurisdiction, and your position has to be that there was absolutely nothing about the goalpost that contributed to the injuries here.
Well, comparative fault also existed in all the cases, the Welch case, the Moss case.
Right,
every one of those cases, comparative fault existed. Comparative fault's been around since 1985,
sure.
I believe.
Sure, no, I know. But I
and
mean,
I understand.
The quality, the nature and the kinds of things you could do to the product are different in each one of these cases. You know, you didn't have an air gun sitting out there. You had a goalpost, and the goalpost, it was known, was going to be pulled down. I don't think you're contesting that, at least for summary judgment purposes. And so the question then becomes whether there is whether it's just such a likely event that you had a duty to put a safer design on the market.
Or if it's such a likely event that the plaintiff should have known of that event, and therefore it was open and obvious.
When did they start making goalposts out of aluminum?
Good question. I believe it was in the 1970s, Your Honor. I know the goalposts, Gilman started making goalposts in 1960, but I believe the aluminum came along later. And the actual slingshot goalpost has been around since the early 70s. Gilman was not the original designer. I think it was Triman that designed
it. I assume that they went, made them out of aluminum to make them lighter. But
they did, well, because of the uprights. You have tall uprights, and with steel, they sag more. They don't last as long. Aluminum doesn't rust either, whereas steel does. And that was another good point, is no matter what type of goalpost you use, people can still get injured and they can still come down. Even the so-called indestructible goalpost, the record shows that it did come down, I believe, a Kansas game. As I was saying, the Mesman case ignores Welch. It ignores the Cole versus Lantis. It ignores Baker versus Hay. It ignores the fact that the requirement to show unreasonably dangerous has existed since the Indiana Products Liability Act was first enacted. It hasn't changed. And what the Mesman case looked at was incurred risk, and somehow, for some reason, tried to stretch it to say it also applied to the unreasonably dangerous with no support. We believe Judge Hamilton properly ruled as a matter of law that this goalpost was not unreasonably dangerous, that the students there, especially the plaintiff in this case, seeing 18 students rocking a goalpost back and forth, was aware of and should have been aware of using the objective test. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. How much time is it? You have 1 minute for your rebuttal.
The defendant claims there's no evidence of unreasonably dangerous in this case, and the defense ignores that unreasonably dangerous can be proven in and of itself just by showing a feasible, safer alternative design. And so that's the path that we've taken in terms of the evidence on unreasonably dangerous.
Is there any evidence that, say, this hinged design doesn't have different risks of its own? I mean, sometimes you just have to weigh one type of risk against another.
That's exactly right. And somebody could trip and fall over the hinged goalpost, but the injury potential associated with that kind of thing is not anywhere near the danger associated with a sudden collapse of a 470-pound goalpost. And to the extent that there may be other dangers associated with other designs, those are issues that counsel can argue to a jury, but those are not dispositive unless there's undisputed evidence on the subject.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the second.